This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I've been through six different OCs, you know, so I'm able to adjust to any offense and every scheme and make it work. We went from Jackson State to Colorado and changed two programs back to back. So you don't think I could come to an NFL franchise and change a program again? It's history. We've done it again. It's always going to repeat itself.
Shedeur Sanders at the Combine will not be throwing. If you went to the Combine, would you throw?
Sure.
Why not, right?
I'm not scared. What do I have to lose?
I think the interesting one of these so far, and there's probably more than one, our next guest will almost surely know, Tet McMillan, the receiver from Arizona, is not running. And that's not a great sign.
Is he almost assured to be the first receiver taken?
I think so.
That's sort of why Sanders and Ward don't throw.
But
you're already telling me I'm going, you know, early as it is. All I can probably do is hurt myself if I am bad. So I'm fine.
So I'm probably bad.
No, I'm probably going to avoid being bad on this day.
Looking bad, yeah.
It could be a bad day to have a bad day, like Andy Reid said earlier this week about the Super Bowl. So
weird for a receiver not to run.
More controlled situation, not unprecedented.
London is one.
Some of the big guys didn't run last year, I think.
Rude of us to not bring Theo in. Theo's over there. Guys, I know the answers to these. Theo Greminger, player profiler. What do we leave out there, Theo, if you happen to have been listening?
No, I think it's an interesting conversation because I think it's getting to be more and more amplified where prospects kind of sit things out. Where years ago, it sort of started with the bowl games years ago. Where people are making kind of financial decisions. I don't think that every opt-out of the 40 or opting out of throwing at the combine is necessarily an indictment on the player's skill there. For some of them, it's what do they have to gain? What do they have to lose? For some players where we had maybe big-time question marks about their speed, you could kind of argue that it's a little bit of a red flag. But nowadays we have more and more like miles per hour testing, which is pretty reliable that we're actually getting from collegiate players already heading into it. And then the pro day 40s, you always have like a little bit of distrust about the 40 times at pro days, but they've been getting a little bit tighter with that. It's getting more and more difficult to inflate 40 times and stuff with all the miles per hour technology that we have. So I'm not super worried about it. Like Shedeur Sanders is not throwing at the combine. Neither did Bryce Young. He went with the first overall pick. I think when it comes to guys like Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, I think they probably have assurances about where they're going to go in the draft with teams sort of banking on them. I thought it was weird today. Cleveland Browns social media did like a post on X talking about like the bright futures of Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward. It's like, that's kind of weird. You know, you're sitting at the number two overall pick.
Right.
Maybe you're starting the hype train for the fan base. So I don't put as much into it. It's very disappointing, Mike, for us who want to see these guys with like a full numbers, the full picture. We've been waiting on the combine like forever, seemingly. So I think it's more frustrating for us than it is the NFL teams. I know our good friend Sigmund Bloom from Football Guys reminded everybody the other day that the most important thing about the combine is the stuff we don't see, the physicals, where the NFL teams are actually going to get real information on these guys, the physicals, all that sort of thing.
Right, and yesterday that was a big story as it pertains to the potential number one pick, Abdul Carter. What do you think of that? Mike and I talked about it a little bit yesterday, and I think it could be enough to scare somebody off of it, even if it's given a clean bill now, like he doesn't need the surgery. You're still going into it with the potential for that to become a thing. And, like, I don't know, it's not that convoluted to me to get into the season and, you know, he's on Tennessee, say, first overall, and they're having a bad year and his foot's bothering him, and, like, okay, we'll just shut him down and we'll bring him back next summer. And that's not what you want to do when you're drafting a guy 101, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, you want clear non-red flag issues with the 101. I think, if anything, it puts a little bit more of a conversation at the 101, where Abdul Carter's a freak, and he's a very, very well-respected prospect in terms of both athleticism, on-field production, like, you know, compares to some of the better edge rushers that we've seen over the last 10 years. So I think that the foot injuries definitely something where NFL teams are going to have to make a little bit more of a decision. But I think he's got a very insulated floor just about how far he could fall. Now, does Tennessee take him at the 101? The 101 is interesting. I've done three mock drafts so far, and I've had Tennessee taking a quarterback at the one spot in every single one. I get that there's better prospects, and I get that not perfect quarterbacks. You guys know the value of a quarterback on a rookie contract in the NFL, and when you're sitting there at the 101 and you have quarterback issues, for me, I think they've got to take a chance and draft one of these guys and just hit, or potentially a spot where they know they're guaranteed to get another one of these quarterbacks. But I think he's got to walk out of this draft with a quarterback. Just my opinion. I think that when you go into, you have the number one pick, and then you end up with some sort of a bridge quarterback, you know, a Justin Fields or a Daniel Jones or whoever, Kirk Cousins, that they would get if they didn't draft one of these guys. You might not ever be back in that situation where you're picking one again and have a chance to get, like, your pick of the litter of the players. So I still am of the opinion that Tennessee is going to take a quarterback, and I think the Carter news probably makes that a little bit better of a bet.
Theo Greminger, our guest on the Western Hotline. You know, Tennessee is especially interesting for what I'm thinking of here, in that they drafted Levis in round two, and before that, Malik Willis in round three, like sort of middling bets on young quarterbacks. I think they could do that again here by the sound of the quarterback class, Theo. Like, you've got those two guys, and you're laying out why they could or should take one at the first overall, but they pick early in round two. I think Cleveland goes first. It's a different order, but they pick early in round two. What about those guys that are likely, or at least possibly, available there? Jackson Dart, Milroe. Is Tennessee sort of, is that like a non-starter for them? No pun intended, perhaps, because of their recent past, or is that maybe a good idea?
You kind of made an argument not to do this with the two guys you referenced, yeah. Where, you know, it's sort of like they've done it twice, where they've invested that draft capital on a lesser bet quarterback. Neither one worked out. It's sort of a half measure what they did with those two guys, where neither one worked out. Now it's sort of like a chance to get a premium asset. For me, I would be surprised if they go that route. Dart's an interesting one, because I'm projecting him to go inside the first round. I think Jackson Dart has enough juice and enough of a profile and a big arm and some mobility where, Mike, I remember this time last year where we were seeing guys like Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. projected by, like, the Las Vegas odds. Their over-unders in the first round were somewhere down in the 29, 30, 31 range, yep. Like just teetering on the brink of the second round. And both of those guys end up being selected inside the top 12 overall picks, that sort of range. So for me, I think when it comes to Dart, I don't think he's increased prospect to some of these guys, and I don't think there's as large of a gap between him and QB2 as I think the market is reflecting now. Looking at, like, Pittsburgh, you start looking at teams trying to reposition themselves into the back end of the first round. I think there's enough quarterback needy teams that Jackson Dart is going to be an appealing one. So, especially with Matt Stafford now, you know, working everything out with the Rams and sort of that chip is off the table. It's a very thin free agent class at the quarterback position. You know, you have Sam Darnold, and then again, some of these bridge quarterbacks like Justin Fields, who can kind of fill the gap but aren't necessarily long-term answers. So I think that if Dart does just enough where you can squint and see a potentially effective pro quarterback, that somebody's going to pull the trigger there and take him in the first.
Right, and he, you know, speaking of guys who aren't motivated to throw like Ward and Sanders, Dart's going to throw, Milroe's going to throw, Shug is going to throw, and I wonder, like, any of those guys, you already talked about Dart, Mike and I have a bet on Milroe, because I'm expecting some team to just fall in love with him after, or maybe a few teams to fall in love with him after he puts on a display. This seems like a ready-made event for a guy with a big arm and who can really run. I mean, he'll run a 40. I mean, I don't know about his running, how much that will be on display in this event, but I'm curious about either one of those guys being sort of like you just talked about, Nix and or Penix.
Yeah, so Milroe's the interesting one because it's the old adage that all it takes is one, where he does have some faults, but you reference the speed. This is a player that in an SEC game, in big boy football at the college football level, he hit 22.5 miles per hour. He also beat Georgia as a starting quarterback. So there is some interesting traits to Milroe. Milroe also, you know, participated in the Senior Bowl, had a slow day one, but improved day two, day three. And it's sort of a similar story where, you know, these guys go to the Senior Bowl, they do just enough for some team. I would be willing to bet Milroe's probably a day two selection, though. I don't think that he's one that's going to leap up. There's just some limitations in the passing game with him, and I'm not sure that we're going to get a fourth quarterback inside the first round. For me, I think the bet is Dart. And Dart also, of course, you know, went to the Senior Bowl. Like you said, he's participated in all the drills at the Combine. He also put on a display at the Senior Bowl where he was clearly the best quarterback there. So I think it's sort of been a good offseason for Dart, and it could end up being a much better one if he performs well tomorrow at the Combine.
Theo Greminger, our guest here for a few more minutes. What about Travis Hunter? And we can make this in part a fantasy question, Theo. I got to get you at least one. Hunter went from, Heisman Trophy speaks for itself, receiver, corner, combo, and in early drafts. And by the way, where we're drafting right now is not that early anymore, Bulldog. These are sort of, it's not mid-season either, but, you know, we're well into the draft season. He was, you know, kind of interesting, and then when it was reported he was going to the Combine to focus on corner, he became less interesting. Now you've got teams talking this week, Theo, and a lot of them see him as wide receiver, even probably the best wide receiver in the class. So what about him, even at the first pick, as an idea, or wherever you might like him more? And then also, like, is he somebody you're betting on, realizing what we don't know yet in terms of fantasy as a receiver?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a sort of a opportunity cost for us in early best balls, Mike, where you get a chance to take a guy who's being priced into being a part-time wideout, who if ends up in the right situation and they use him as a situational corner and a primary wide receiver, then you're holding with sort of Garrett Wilson-like ability, maybe even a little bit more explosive an athlete. And you factor in the fact that did his development at the wide receiver spot be held back significantly by having to play all those snaps at cornerback and be a dominant defensive player? I mean, it sort of has to. So what am I betting on? You know me, I'm always betting on the fantasy football outcome. I hope Travis Hunter never plays a snap of defense in the NFL and we get him for fantasy football, because I think he'd be a very effective player for us. I had a chance to pod with Dwayne McFarland, and in his model, he has Travis Hunter, like, way, way up there historically. The model doesn't account for him possibly playing cornerback. It's just evaluating him as a wide receiver prospect. And he's up there with, like, some of the top names in fantasy over the last 10 years as prospects. So I'm all over Travis Hunter if he does make that switch. Triple team drafts him and says, you know what, he's an every down wide receiver for us, because I think he's a really, really good talent. I'm sort of hopeful that it's New England that gets him, because I think that Mike Vrabel has the kind of the stones and the personality where he might be sort of somebody who embraces an outlier profile where he does something where no other NFL team would do. Vrabel was a two-way player himself, obviously on a limited snaps basis. He had 10 catches as a pro, and I think they were all touchdown catches, or 8 for 8, something crazy. So Vrabel's already played both sides of the ball. He's a very aggressive-minded guy. When he was in Tennessee, he said he would do something sort of unthinkable in order to win a Super Bowl. If you know one there. You can Google the quote. I think Vrabel, if he had that sort of a talent, especially with their limitations they have at wide receiver in New England, maybe we'd see Travis on the field as much as humanly possible with an almost full-time offensive role. I think that's sort of our best bet for fantasy, where you get top five draft capital and a coach who's willing to play him. I think Vrabel's the one.
Theo, on the heels of a season that could be described as a running back renaissance, you've got a draft class here that is just chock full. We've been hearing about this since Halloween, I feel like. There's just going to be an incredible bunch of running backs in this draft class. How are you looking at that, and just how high are you on this class of running backs?
I'm ecstatic with this class. I think that this is the best class we've had since 2017. Which is sort of the class that everybody points to as to what's possible for us in fantasy football. We had a lower level of talent and draft capital in last year's running back class. It's sort of this year's class is almost two classes together, talent-wise, where you have a guy who's like my running back 5 right now, who I think would have graded out higher than Jonathan Brooks, who was the first running back selected last year. You bring up the fact that running back is sort of back in vogue for NFL teams. We saw it with the Jonathan Taylor contract. We saw it with teams like Arizona and New Orleans re-signing their veterans with Kamara and Connor. And, of course, the success of Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, and a ton of guys last year. So it's a copycat league, and high-end running back production Philadelphia does not win a Super Bowl without Saquon Barkley this year, period. And I think that sort of success, coupled with the fact that Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs both really, really hit, is going to potentially create a perfect storm where we could have 3 running backs selected in the first round this year. I really believe that. I think if I was setting the over-under, I'd put the over-under right at 2, because I think that there will be 2 selected. And I think that by the end of the day, there's enough in the quality in like the running backs 2 through 5 and enough teams that I could see making a move to get inside the first round or simply selecting in the last 10 picks in the first round that guys like Omarion Hampton, guys like Travion Henderson, guys like Caleb Johnson, all of the non-Ashton Jeanty running backs in that sort of big 5 are going to be in the mix for the first round. Then on top of that, we get Ashton Jeanty, who's sort of a generational prospect. And if you don't think he's a generational prospect, he's at least as good a prospect as Bijan was coming out, where some people are saying this is the best prospect they've seen since Saquon Barkley in the evaluative buildup. And what's interesting is when you look at non-fantasy people but NFL people doing their big boards, Ashton Jeanty is viewed as the number one offensive player in this entire draft in terms of just the overall. So that's the guy who we could go see go inside of the top 10 picks. I projected 3 running backs in my latest mock draft to be selected the first round. I know Mel Kiper also had Omarion Hampton going at 12 overall and talked about how Omarion Hampton is high on a lot of NFL teams' boards and pretty close to Jeanty. Hampton's been my RB2 in this class for months now. And there's sort of an argument who's the RB2 in the class. I think we'll know a little bit more after this weekend. But Caleb Johnson, Travion Henderson both have their backers. But with Omarion Hampton, he's got size. He's got athleticism. He's going to weigh 225 plus. He was had over 2,000 scrimmage yards this year for UNC without Drake May. And he's one of only 4 players in ACC history to have 1,500 rushing yards and 15 rushing touchdowns in back-to-back seasons. The other 3 players were Dalvin Cook, Lamar Jackson, and Travis Etienne, 3 guys that have all had big-time fantasy success. So for me, Omarion Hampton, I think, is just tailor-made to be a two-way back in the NFL, and I think after this weekend, I think he'll be a first-round pick. And then Travion Henderson is people chasing the Jahmyr Gibbs couple of players where there's all this data about how big plays generate points in the NFL. If you have a big play, an explosive play on a drive, I think your chances of scoring like go up like four times. So the Jahmyr Gibbs model is going to help Travion Henderson. Henderson might light up the combine athletically. There's some sort of whispers out there. And I think somebody might pull the trigger on him as like a high-value touch guy, explosive play guy. And Caleb Johnson is another 220-pound back that was extremely productive at Iowa this year. A lot of people are very high on him. And then the guy that we're not projecting to go first round, really be a strong second-round pick, Quinshon Judkins, was unbelievable at Ole Miss. And then, of course, everybody saw him have three touchdown runs in the national championship game this year for Ohio State. Unbelievable profile for our running back five. And then we could talk forever, guys, because there's a bunch more running backs in this class that might end up being day two picks and have a lot of fantasy potential. So, yeah, fantasy managers or dynasty managers, this is the year where you want to take running backs. And, Mike, in our early best balls, those rookie running backs are values right now, because I think they're all going to move up in redraft ADP as we get closer to the summer.
Get as many of them as you can. Theo, where is the mock draft that you're talking about? Where can our listeners find it?
PlayerProfiler.com. It's over there for free. You can go read it whenever you want. And then I'm going to do an update this week. There's a couple guys that I think I'm going to have to move up, especially the defensive line after the numbers we saw yesterday. Guys like, you know, James Pierce and Stewart, Derek Harmon, a couple of these guys had very, very strong performances in Indianapolis. I think they've sort of cemented themselves in. So I'll do an update. I'm going to continue doing these mock drafts. Then I'm also doing fantasy rookie ranking updates. I'll have those at Player Profiler and Fantasy Points. And then I did a way too early top 25, Mike, for redraft at Fantasy Points. And I'm doing an update. That's going to be a top 50. That should be coming out really soon. That's something that I put a lot of work into. And there will be a couple of non-Ashton Jeanty rookies inside of my redraft top 50 overall. A number of those running backs, and also Tet McMillan will be in there.
Thank you, Theo. Great to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
Theo Greminger at VOG Fantasy, which is also Theo G Fantasy, depending on your mood. You can look at that if you're him.
It works either way.
It's my name or, you know, like I'm the man. Whatever. It does work either way. We will have Sam Paniatovich and Sal Capaccio along next hour. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.